This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and I'm joined by Ashley Thornburg and Galen Lee Tressler. We're going to talk about Galen Lee's wonderful music career right here on Main Street, because she's going to be performing right off Main Avenue this evening at the Red Raven Espresso Parlor at 9th and Main in Fargo. Great to have you with us, Galen.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That name certainly familiar to many an NPR fan. She is the 2016 winner of the Tiny Desk Contest and has gone on to become, well, really a road warrior.
Yeah.
Sold the house, living in the van, on tour, hot off the heels of a performance in Grand Forks and performing tonight in Fargo. So we really appreciate you stopping by here.
Thank you.
How much time have you spent in that van lately?
Oh, my goodness. We did some math because we were curious. We have an apartment in Duluth where we live in Minnesota. And I think we did the math and we slept there 90 nights of the last year. So I think that makes it being about on the road for 9 months.
So how has your life changed since 2016's big win at the Tiny Desk Concert?
It has changed a lot. My husband and I both left our jobs. I was teaching fiddle. I had about 15 students and rented out a little space right by the lake in Duluth. It was a very good life. I was doing well. But we really wanted to try touring, and in order to do it successfully, I needed him to go with me. So he at first got a leave of absence, but then eventually left his employment at the university. And we got this van that, knock on wood, has held up so far. And, yeah, we just kind of left and started playing all over the country. We've done 42 states and 6 countries.
And after your appearance in Fargo tonight, you're off to Dickinson and then Bozeman the day after that.
Yeah, it's going to be lots of drives, but these will be fun shows. Dickinson I've done once before. This time I'll be at the Brick House Grill for a free show, which should be pretty cool. And then that'll be my first time in Bozeman, so I'm excited to just kind of see some new places along the way.
It's a pretty place.
What first drew you to playing the fiddle, the violin?
Well, I was in fourth grade, and the orchestra from the middle school came to our elementary school and played for us. And I just remember being kind of blown away by the sound of the strings, and I just really loved it. I don't know exactly what it was that drew me, but the instant I saw it, I knew I wanted to do it. So the next year, I auditioned, it's like a music listening test, I guess. And I was the only student that year that got a perfect score. So the teacher really wanted to help me figure it out. So she took it upon herself to help me adapt the way I play. Because I have a disability, my arms and legs are shorter. So I couldn't play the cello, which was my first choice, because it was just too big. And the violin, I couldn't fit on my shoulder because my arms were too short. So we compromised and found this way where I play my violin up and down like a little cello. And it works really well. But it's cool that she was so creative. It wasn't until many years later where it kind of dawned on me that she could have said, you should do choir instead. This isn't going to work. And she didn't ever say that. So I've been playing ever since.
Well, it sure did work. Let's just listen to a sample of the piece of music that won the award for you. This is the piece you composed, Someday Will Linger in the Sun.
That is beautiful. Thank you so much.
What made you pick that song to submit to the Tiny Desk Contest?
It's kind of a funny story, actually. I had it narrowed down to three choices, and I had, this was way before touring was even a thought in my mind. I played a weekly gig at a pizza shop in my hometown, and I was like, I'm going to enter this contest. I'm going to have you guys vote. There were like maybe 12 people listening, and I mean, like, it was not a very huge sample size, but I had them vote between the three, and this was the overwhelming pick, and so it's good that I did that, because I honestly was going to go with a different song, and then I was like, well, this is the one that the people chose, so I'll submit this one, and it's weird how it worked out.
Well, it's a haunting melody in a way. Well, how would you describe your style?
You know, I guess for me, I'm a lyrics person, and so I think about the meaning of songs a lot, and so for me, when I write, a lot of times it's about the paradox between life being both beautiful and difficult at the same time, and how you kind of have to be in both worlds that way. And so that's sort of like the energy of the songs, like kind of maybe melancholy but hopeful at the same time.
And besides that, the string sounds in there, there's this looping quality. Don't you do some additional piece in there?
Yeah, so it's really fun. I met a person named Alan Sparhawk. He's in the band Low. Back in 2011, and we started playing together, and he gave me a looping pedal, and he said, I think you're going to like it. Someday you'll perform by yourself, and I didn't really believe him, but he was right. And what it is it's a little recording device. It sits in my wheelchair. I push it down with my leg. A lot of people use their foot or whatever, but while you're holding the button down, it's actually recording what you play, and then the second I let go of the button, it loops it back, and you can build as slow or as quickly as you like, all these layers of sound. And so I had never been able to perform solo before, before I got the pedal. And when I got more competent with it, I realized that it kind of opened up a whole lot of options. So, I started looping, and it's been great. That's how I perform most of my shows. Like tonight, I'll be doing a solo set with the violin kind of filling in all the musical roles of a band.
So when you're performing with the loop, do you try to make it sound like the same song every time, or do you intentionally change what gets looped and when that's airing and have kind of a different version of the same song all the time?
Well, the goal is to at least have the bass, like the foundation, be the same, because it's very rhythmic. And so if you're going to sing, it kind of has to be a certain number of measures. And the funny part about the looping pedal is if you loop the first layer wrong, the whole song is wrong, basically. So the first line is really important. And then after that, once you have the solid foundation of rhythm down, you can be more experimental. And once in a while, I'll change it up. But generally, the more you loop, especially the more you've done a particular song, you eventually find something that to you is the most pleasing. And you only change it if you're like, I want to try something new today. You know what I mean?
I Googled Galen Lee, and a torrent of stuff came down. I found out all kinds of things about you, including the fact that you're working on a new album that's going to be released in September.
Yeah, I'm so, so excited about it. I wrote a lot of new songs in the last couple of years, and they hadn't been recorded, and some of them couldn't be looped, and so I decided to make this album with a full band. There's definitely elements of the looping and the fiddle, but there's kind of this whole new dimension of songwriting that I was able to explore without having to feel constricted to just doing things I could loop, and so I'm really excited for this. It's coming out September 7th.
Well, I look forward to that show being on, too.
I know. I'm really pumped. I think that's kind of like my goal now. I'm booking out for the fall and really trying to make it financially feasible to bring as much of the band with me as possible, because they're great. They're from Minneapolis. Marty Dosh used to play with Andrew Bird, so he's my drummer. And it's neat because Andrew Bird is a looping violinist, and there's not that many of us out there. Yeah. So he's a great guy to have in your band, because he really follows the loops. It's really cool. It's not something that is very common.
You talked about the importance of lyrics. Does this new album sort of tell a story? Is it thematically connected? Is there a title for it? Working title?
Yeah, there is a title. It's called Learning How to Stay. And when I thought about the whole album, the big theme that came out was being able to be present in the present moment, but not just in positive times, like also wading through the negative times. And, you know, there's a song about the disability rights movement on there that makes me really excited called I Wait. And it's just about how do you live in that space before change happens where you need need to stay positive and focused. And so the album, kind of that's the theme, if you were to think of it mm-hmm. as a whole.
How has being on tour, you've been a disability rights activist for a long time. Has being on tour changed your perspective on that at all? I mean, I just think there's got to be a whole new world of things that you're seeing mm-hmm. And interacting with on a very intimate and different level now.
Yeah, that's a good question. It definitely connects me to the experience as a nation, I think, more. You know, when you grow up in Duluth, it's a reasonable sized town, but it's not very big, and that's really where I had lived most of my life. And then you get out on the road and you realize everybody's facing the same issues that you do, so it's not in your head, and it's also not, it's like, it's not just your town, you know, that's behind. It's like the whole nation is dealing with these issues. So that has helped kind of like make me want to be more vocal about the things I see as problems, because I know it's not just me facing them now. I know that it's, you know, employment and healthcare access and accessibility and all these things that I felt like were issues I now have confirmation are truly a nationwide thing. And then also it's made me be able to meet a lot more activists and realize that it's a really healthy, vibrant community of people that are working towards disability rights. And so it's been fun to meet them at shows and stuff. I've been seeing more people with disabilities at my shows. It's certainly a very mixed group of people that go, but it's cool that people are understanding that somebody that looks like them is on stage. And it's fun. It's fun to be a part of that movement. I hope it gets more and more common.
You were born, as you mentioned, with the osteogenesis imperfecta, brittle bone disease.
Yep.
How do you describe it to others, and how does it affect your life?
Well, you know, my disability is a connective tissue. The collagen isn't formed genetically the same way as like it's supposed to be or whatever. So my bones are more brittle. So I break bones easier than other people, but I also broke a lot before I was born, and that's why my arms and legs are bent and shorter. But I've had an electric wheelchair since I was 2.5, so I've had a great deal of mobility, and I had a really supportive family. So, I mean, my disability clearly affects every area of my life, but on the other hand, there's a lot of other things that I identify with, too. You know what I mean? It's a mixed bag that way.
We're visiting with musician Galen Lee. She is performing tonight in Fargo. She performed last night in Grand Forks and is heading off to Dickinson soon and Bozeman for a series of shows. Galen, we want to hear another song. We have a sample from Dark to Light and Dark Again.
Muscles, nerves, and skin and bones, they carry us on our journey home. Day by day, they sustain us. Yes, but our bodies, they never fully contain us. We rise above that matter which seeks to detain us from the truth, from the love, from each other, from above. We're everything all at once. We need changing tides until it ends. Take it in, don't close your eyes, and piece by piece shed your disguise. Tell your spirit is what you have gained. Burning bright.
Well, that's a different style.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you write country songs?
I mean, I didn't think so. So basically, I wrote that song, and I knew I wanted it to be upbeat, and when I brought it to the recording studio, the band kind of had this country vibe, but it totally fit. And I was like, well, this actually works. One of the things I really wanted to explore is I wanted the album to have a thematic connection, but I did not want it to be easily pegged into any one genre, because one thing I love about playing is making a show or an album like really ebb and flow with different sounds. And so, yeah, this is my country song on this album.
Well, you have broad interests. I mean, again, that Google stream told me that you graduated from college with a major in political science.
Yep.
And a minor in psychology.
Yeah.
So how does that express itself in your work?
Well, I definitely think that socially I when I'm writing, I have a lot of social issues in mind, and then psychology too. I mean, the things I write about a lot of times are about just really intense emotions of the human experience, and I'm sure that's just because I've read a lot about it. I find it really interesting, and I think that the way we interact with the events that happen to us has a lot to do with the outcomes, you know, the way you respond. And so, yeah, my songs kind of touch on those subjects, and spirituality a lot too. I'm very interested in different forms of spirituality, and I think it all kind of creeps into your writing.
And the people you surround yourself with, your parents and your husband, Paul.
Yeah, I have been really lucky. The people that are close to me have been so supportive and just really interesting, cool people. And I don't know, I am grateful for that every day. I think about that a lot, actually, that who you're around matters a lot, and I am very lucky to have a good group.
When you start writing a song, do you start with the words? Do you start with the music? Does it totally depend? What's your process?
My process is usually I'm in the shower. And
that's where I do my singing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. And what will happen is, or like some other time when your mind is kind of disconnected and kind of just floating around, all of a sudden, usually it happens in the form of one line with the lyrics and melody attached, but it'll just be like a line. Like when I wrote that song for the Tiny Desk, the first thing that came to me was, "Our love's a complex vintage wine, all rotted leaves and lemon rind." And that's all I had for like a couple weeks. And it would just play and play and play in my head, and eventually it builds itself. And then when you get to a certain tipping point, like when it's about halfway done, you can really sit down and make yourself finish it. But for me, it kind of has to build organically for the first verse and chorus, at least, so that I know what direction it's heading in before I, like, force it to be done.
Well, let's get another sample. Bound by a Thread.
You could have saved, but you came here instead to fill my life's empty pain.
How many layers was that? You sounded like I was Galen Lee in choral form.
Oh yeah, that's going to be on the new album. That's one of the new tracks, and that was recorded in the studio. I'm singing harmony to myself, and then we actually did have a chorus. My guitar player brought his guitar students in, and they sang like this backup part at the end of the song, and it was really fun to work with them. They also did some hand claps on a different song. And it's kind of fun to incorporate new people. You know, the way I do that song live, my violin is probably layered up about 12 deep. But on the recording, you can do it a really different way, and it's kind of fun to experiment.
Guitar player brought in some of his guitar students. Have you ever brought in some of your former fiddle students?
Not yet. One thing I did do on the new album is there's a duet with... I started playing fiddle because I had a crush on this boy. He later ended up... being with a very nice man, and I ended up being with a very nice man, and we're still very good friends. But he taught me a lot of the tunes that I know, and so one of the songs is a special one to me called Jim and Judy's Wedding, and I asked him to come record that with me as a duet. So he is on the album with me because it was funny, I wrote him an email after, and I was like, I'm really glad you were part of that. And he's like, I probably would have been kind of mad at you if you hadn't asked me, because that's our song. That's our, like, special song. We used to play it all the time. We've done it at weddings and all sorts of things. So it was fun to have him on the album. Maybe someday I'll bring in a fiddle student. Hasn't happened yet.
Well, you recently played a track for the Twin Cities group, the Decemberists. You performed with the Duluth Symphony Orchestra for St. Patty's Day.
Yep.
So you're getting out there. You're getting famous.
I mean, I don't know about famous, but a lot of cool opportunities have been coming down the line. And I think it's I'm really grateful. You know, you never know what's going to happen. And every time somebody asks, you know, the Decemberists song came by because I met the guitarist. He did a short documentary on me, and then I played with him in Portland. I asked him to learn a few of my songs, and he sat in with me. And then the next day, he texted me, and he said, "What are you doing right now?" And I was like, "Nothing until 5 when I have to go to the show." And he's like, "Well, do you want to record on our album?" And I was like, "Yes, I will be there in an hour. See you very soon." So, like, you just got to say yes when those things happen, yeah. You know?
It seems like it's been maybe one surreal moment after the next.
Exactly.
What's been the most surreal?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, recording with the Decemberists is up there because they were my favorite band in college. I mean, I saw them live. I knew, a lot of their songs memorized. So it was pretty cool to meet them in real life. I mean, I met the whole band that day, and I'm opening for them now, and just, like, it just feels very weird. Another surreal moment, I guess, was I played a show in the Czech Republic with a band of people who are disability rights advocates. They all have disabilities, but they do this really cool percussion and wind instrument band and called the Tap Tap. And I came out, and it was just, like, this huge crowd, and it was such a big production, and it just felt really weird because I'm also in the Czech Republic. I don't speak the language, and I'm like, what is happening right now? I don't know. It was very interesting. A lot of things like that have happened, though. It's been a really cool 2 years.
You have a Facebook page, your Galen Lea Music. That's GALYNNLEA Music. And then also you have a blog, violinscratches.com.
Yeah.
You're up there. You describe yourself as an independent wellness advocate. What does that mean?
Yeah, I think it's important, you know, in all the work that we do, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that I think it's really important to take care of ourselves and to you know, like, not search after success just for the point of being successful. I think it's really important to be mindful of, like, doing the things that you want to be doing and taking care of yourself along the way. So it's hard to do that on the road, but I really believe that ultimately at the end of the day, you don't have to chase after success to live a successful life. You know what I mean? You can be just living the best version of yourself, and whatever that means for you is good enough, you know? And so that's kind of what I mean by a wellness advocate. I think it's important to look at the whole picture. Not everybody's version of success is going to look the same, partly because of disability too, you know? I think it's important that we value everybody's life experiences and not just whoever's in the spotlight. I think it's really important to remember that everybody is valuable.
Galen Lea is performing this evening at the Red Raven Espresso Parlor in downtown Fargo. She'll be in Dickinson at the Brick House Grill on Thursday evening. Galen Lea, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Take a look around and watch the world unfold. Watch the world unfold. Watch the world unfold. Watch the world unfold.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Coming up on Main Street, we'll hear about Wish Fast, a superhero walk-run event in support of Make-A-Wish North Dakota, and we'll get another sample of a panel discussion at the recent UND Writers Conference from our Bill Thomas. First, the news with Danielle.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. The State Industrial Commission has approved loans for two revolving loan funds for water and sewer projects. $147 million from the Clean Water State Revolving Loan Fund goes to expand its wastewater facility. That's to accommodate West Fargo and Horace users. That loan will be repaid by user fees. Another $24 million loan was okayed for its raw water treatment facility. It comes from the Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund, and that expansion will also provide treated water to West Fargo, and it will be paid back through user fees. The city had approved a sales tax increase for infrastructure, but North Dakota Public Finance Authority Director Deanne Ament told the commission,
"They have been using their sales tax to repay their water and sewer debt. In the last couple of months, they've decided they want to retain their sales tax capacity for possibly having to pay for diversion-related things.
Ament says the city is planning to raise its fees for water and sewer every other year. The $1.3 trillion federal spending bill includes a lot of agriculture-related changes and funding. Harvest Public Media's Madeline Beck details some of them.
Federal ag research came out a big winner in the bill passed last week. May Barenbaum researches bee health at the University of Illinois and gets some funding through the USDA's Agriculture and Food Research Initiative. She says ag research matters to more than just farm workers.
Even though fewer than 2% of Americans work on farm, nonetheless, a lot of the economy, even at the federal level, is dependent on our ability to not only feed our nation, but to help feed the world.
Other parts of the legislation kill an air pollution reporting requirement for large livestock operations and give $600 million extra dollars to expand broadband in rural areas. Madeline Beck, Harvest Public Media.
And Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton's push to guarantee continued funding for school-based pre-kindergarten programs is in limbo. Republican legislative leaders have not committed to making that school aid permanent. GOP Senate Education Finance Committee Chair Carla Nelson says this is not a full-blown budget-setting year.
We know this is important to the governor. We know it's important that all kids get great preschool. But I do believe that his desire at this point for additional funding and then an increase every year, I think, of an additional 5% is premature.
The Dayton administration says dozens of school districts will lose at least part of their pre-K allowances if a funding extension does not come through. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined now by Nick Schulich. He is with Wish Fast, which is a program with a relationship with Make-A-Wish. Thank you for being with us today.
Well, thank you, Doug.
Well, describe, Nick, what Wish Fast is.
So we've been doing this since I graduated college. It was a class project we started in 2014. It was kind of started off as it started from the Bat Kid, who had his wish to be Bat Kid in San Francisco. So the whole city of San Francisco turned into Gotham City for him.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they thought that was great and all, and I thought the best part about that is he got his wish, and many people of the community wanted to be a part of that. Well, with Wish Fast, we want to make sure that everybody felt they were a superhero for a day. So we get together throughout the courses. There's a 3, 5, and 10K, and throughout all of those courses, there's a villain scattered through there that they get to fight and battle and really treat it more as an adventure instead of a run or just a regular event.
So it's fun with some obstacles or some adventures along the way.
Yeah, we got obstacle courses that go through there, and, I mean, the kids get to see all of their favorite villains like the Joker, Venom, whoever they can think of that we have available, and, you know, sometimes the villains have to wear shin guards, but...
Well, how many? You've done this before. This is the fifth annual. So,
yep.
What kind of turnout do you get?
Oh, I mean, we get about 200-300 people that come to this event that are either, you know, they don't have a full superhero costume. They wear just a T-shirt or a cape or something. But the main purpose is that kids get to treat it kind of like a halfway to Halloween. And whether they're part of Make-A-Wish or they're just coming here to support the cause, they all have a super great time, and there's always prizes that we give out. It's the same day as National Free Comic Book Day. So when we don't do ribbons or anything. How I learned to read was through comic books. So we want to make sure all these kids get reading material to, you know, has imagery and something that they can actually enjoy reading.
Remind us again of the purpose of Make-A-Wish.
Well, For Make-A-Wish, their purpose is to help grant wishes for children with medical illnesses. And Wish Fast is an external organization, but Make-A-Wish has always been very close to our heart. We actually had the privilege of granting a wish of a kid to be a superhero for a day in Fargo. Mm-hmm. So we did the same concept. We had villains scattered throughout the downtown Fargo, and we had Catwoman robbing a jewelry store down Broadway, and at the end of all of it, he ended up in Island Park, got in a helicopter, and he flew away to the jail where all our friends were locked up, and it was a great picture to have.
All right. So that's the mission of Make-A-Wish is to grant wishes to children in grave health circumstances.
Correct.
And you got involved through this class at NDSU, but now you've been doing it for a few years, so the bug has bitten you, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a fun little hobby that we've been doing. It's something all our friends and family get together on. It's kind of a holiday for us or a family reunion that we actually enjoy, but when we get together, it's a halfway to Halloween, and we enjoy dressing up for these kids because seeing them all having fun really just makes us better people. And we, with this hobby, we've decided to go even further than we have before because on the fifth year, we're going to put it in three other cities.
Mm-hmm.
We got in Bismarck, Minot, and Williston this year. So we realized that there aren't just Make-A-Wish kids just in Fargo. They're all across the state. So to see a whole state dressed up as superheroes and supporting one cause, that's something that makes us feel really good to see everybody doing something good for that day.
It's Saturday, May 5th in Bismarck, Fargo, Minot, and Williston. You still hoping to get Grand Forks on the schedule?
We're hoping to, but we'll keep you posted on that. Anyone who's interested just has to like our Facebook page, and they can shoot us a message on there. We're pretty responsive right away. And they can register on our Facebook page or say whichever event they'd like to go to. And if they can't be there the day of May 5th, they can always donate or volunteer.
Well, the purpose of this is to help kids, and kids are certainly part of the event. Who else can participate?
Anybody. I mean, it doesn't matter if you want to walk, run, or if you want to be a supervillain throughout the course. Absolutely. We'll take you. We prefer not to have Captain Underpants at this event, just for the...
Okay, very good. Not necessarily a superhero there, but a well-known...
A well-known character for many reasons.
So just about anybody can participate who's able to run and walk, I take it.
Yep, and even if you can, I mean, we are always looking for volunteers just to, you know, help with, like, parking or help with registration, giving out the food that we give away at the end of all of it, because we want to make sure they have a relaxed experience when they're doing this. They're going to have all the stress of battling the villains throughout the course, but it's supposed to be fun and them just to have fun while going on an adventure.
And it's easy to find out information about this. You have a Facebook presence. Just put Wish Fast, those two words, up there, and the Fargo and Bismarck and Williston and Minot events will be apparent where they're going to take place, and there's information, there are links there. How is the money raised from this event?
We take it as a registration donation. When people come in, they donate online, it's either $20 for children, whether it's the 3, 5, or 10K, and $30 for adults, same for those events. And when they donate, it's just a registration donation. We won't turn you away if you come in saying, I don't have any cash on me, but we'd like you to donate to Make-A-Wish because we truly believe these kids are great. And they have some great wishes that, you know, I wish I could dress up like a superhero for a day and fly away in a helicopter or whatnot, but all the money that we raise goes straight to Make-A-Wish.
So. I know a 4-year-old who loves the Hulk. Do you have sponsors?
We do have sponsors. We have Brentco Equipment, Bolger's Funeral Home, Paradox.
That's in Fargo here?
Yep. Paradox Comics in Fargo, First Community Credit Union. Every one of these guys are professionals, and they understand what Make-A-Wish is for these kids, and they truly appreciate what we do and what Make-A-Wish does for all of them.
Well, again, it takes place on Saturday, May 5th. It runs from 8 in the morning. Is that registration on the spot then, too?
Yep.
Until 11:30. In Bismarck, it's at Sertoma Park. In Fargo, it's at Urban Plains Park. In Minot, Roosevelt Park. And in Williston, Spring Lake Park. And they all have these 3 and 5K walk runs, and I think Fargo has the 10K as well, right?
Yeah, and we've been doing that 10K for about 2-3 years now, so we're keeping that on board. We're giving the other cities a chance to warm up into the feel of things. So,
and the money is used for, is it just handed to make a wish? Or you said you've actually granted a wish through this, right?
Yeah. I mean, when we granted the wish, well, really the only thing we had to do was be there for the event. But there's some kids, you know, that have flights to Disneyland that need to be paid for, or, you know, they have other wishes that take money that are needed to be raised for these wishes. I think the most recent Make-A-Wish promo was they needed miles for the flights for all the kids and families. So that was kind of a neat thing to see donated, was miles from, like, credit cards and stuff.
Okay.
But,
and people have got those available, and you can transfer those miles, so that would do some good as well. How much cash have you raised over the course of the last 4 years?
Over the last 4 years, we raised close to $20,000, and that's just off us doing it as a hobby. So.
And it's getting bigger, so the potential is greater as well.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows the people that are willing to support our cause, even just going to the people that we go to for Bismarck, Minot, and Williston. And every year we seem to have the same people that are continuously making their way to the event in Fargo. So to show them showing their support towards us and to Make-A-Wish, it makes us keep wanting to do this.
Well, you've been bitten by the philanthropy bug. What are your future plans?
I guess I just want to get through Saturday, May 5th.
Because there'll be a sixth one, I assume.
Yeah,
I mean, you're on a roll, right?
Yeah, we just kind of, you know, it's a hobby of ours, so we kind of just wing it the next year we see what we liked about last year, we see what we can improve, and we just continue going on, and we take it year by year, basically.
Well, best of good fortune to you. Nick Schulich is the organizer behind Wish Fast, which aligns itself with Make-A-Wish, granting wishes to seriously ill children. Thank you for being our guest today.
Well, thank you, Doug.
More information at Facebook, Wish Fast. More Main Street in a moment.
This week on Invisibilia, we have a story about how my 74-year-old mom wants to jump out of an airplane.
All right, guys, I'm going to start getting load one trained up.
I'm so excited.
And a reality TV show trying to fight terrorism with music.
Somebody can walk in with a grenade. Somebody can walk in with a gun.
I'm Hannah Rosen. Join us for a look into how the stories we tell ourselves can alter our reality.
Don't miss Invisibilia, this week's Prairie Public Presents, coming up Sunday afternoon at 5 Central, 4 Mountain. Support for Prairie Public is provided by the Bush Foundation, introducing the recipients of the 2018 Bush Fellowship. Learn more about the 2018 Bush Fellows at bushfoundation.org/fellows.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined in studio again by Bill Thomas, our director of radio, and the fellow who was at the UND Writers Conference last week.
I was, and I heard a panel. It was moderated by Kerry Campbell of the Department of History there. And we're going to hear a question that came up from the audience about accents, but they get into talking about the UND logo controversy, because Nicholas Callinan, who's a Native American who was on the panel, talked about seeing the logo on the side of the stadium and what it meant for him. So we'll hear Marlon James. Nicholas is on briefly imitating an English accent, talking about his indigenous heritage, and Lauren Markham also comments about these issues.
So, Nicholas, you've discussed indigenous knowledge and the ways of thinking and how they can be sometimes different from non-indigenous ones. And I think one example is with the old logo. You see the logo, you go to the arena, and it's a symbol of violence to you. And I think that there are a lot of people here who wouldn't understand why that was. I think they really don't understand why it is. And so there's a real gap in understanding and knowledge there. And then, Lauren, in your book, you talk a lot about some of the challenges of Spanish speakers trying to integrate into places where English is the dominant language. So this issue of language and communication and meaning, here's the audience question for Marlon. It's a little bit long, and so just stick with me. Mm-hmm. So, in Seven Killings, dialects say something about characters' social backgrounds or politics, or they're adopted by the characters to project or hide their backgrounds or politics. Can you talk about your background and where you are situated in that map of Jamaican dialects, mm-hmm. and where you, I think, where you see yourself now living in America?
You know, dialect, patois, language is, I don't know how, I'm starting to figure out how it plays in the States, but in Jamaica and in a lot of the former British colonies, it's still a tool of social mobility, but and also a tool of exclusion. And a lot of the characters talk about it. So for me, English is always, I speak a different variants of English for entries into different societies in a way. You know, the way I speak here would not be the way I speak to my friends in Jamaica and so on. And I think even in the book, there are, everybody has this obsession with proper English, even though no, you know, there's really no such thing. Certainly not what the British speak. They speak an atrocious English. Yeah, but this sort of idea of bad English, or and everybody characters keep saying that person chats bad. The whole notion of broken English as if it needs to be fixed, which, you know, ignoring the fact that you know, that English is the most mongrel tongue there is there was a time when I could actually speak Middle English. I totally lost it now. You wouldn't understand what the hell I'm talking about. I'm not going to do it. But but it's anti-language. There's no such thing. And I think that even when we get to questions of people living here who don't speak English or speak English well, and it's still looked upon as this is a tool by which I shall exclude you from being called American or blah blah blah. You know, it's in other ways, it's quite ridiculous. Language is just a tool. But it's one of the things. But it is one of the things that I really wanted to explore in that book: how language includes you in community and sometimes shut you out. One of the funny things about living in Jamaica is that people hear how I talk and just assume I had this huge Ivy League education and I had four maids. And or they go, "Where did you go for college?" I go, "Kingston, Jamaica." There's still this sort of association with language and a sort of and class, but I also, you know, take great pleasure in violating those rules and speaking, you know, those codes. I give British people crap all the time. I was like, you know, it's can't. It's not can't. There's no I in can't. You know, it's like, that's great. It's like, there's not two A's in great. It's great. It's not great. But I get to do that.
Yes, it's quite interesting, actually. This gentleman, my native ancestry.
You have to tell him, gentleman has a T in it.
one thing that you mentioned in, you know, this idea of, I'm furthering the example, so I'm not mm-hmm. trying to pick on you, but like, I wonder if part of the work is, okay, somebody experiences a symbol and experiences it as, you know, evocative of a legacy of violence or a symbol itself of violence, historic cultural violence and erasure, et cetera. Like, I wonder if the work is actually that we all learn what those symbols are and to, now we're getting back into empathy territory, but that violence is part of my job as a white person to be educated such that I might not experience the same feelings of violence of the symbol like on the stadium, but that I understand it as a symbol of violence, right? Like that feels like the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, yeah, I think sometimes we can't let go of this idea that at the core, I'm a good person.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but at the core, there's still things to learn. And at the core, we could be good people trapped in a really horrible, you know, in a really horrible legacy. I remember when I was back in church, and one of the things we'd always talk about is things that we know are wrong, but because it's been done for so long, we keep doing it.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a terrible reason to keep something going.
Yep.
because everybody else, you know, has done it. It's like, we have to get to the point where I always think that one of the purposes of society, as why else should we have it, is to continually civilize ourselves. The problem is everybody thinks civilized means how European can we get. So when I go to panels in Europe and I said the things, well, the problem with, you know, I'll say one thing, the difference between American racism and European racism is that at least the Americans are sophisticated about it. And they're so taken aback at not being called sophisticated because they're European.
Yeah, right, that really
gets them. I was like, actually,
them.
You're actually quite backward when it comes to talking this type of discussions. And the point is that there is, I think if we get in a situation where we realize we should be in a situation where we're constantly learning, and there's nothing wrong if the knowledge you learned today refutes what you learned yesterday.
Right.
If we get to that point where we think that, we're constantly learning, we're constantly getting better, we're constantly in the effort of civilizing ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that is hard work, and it's vital work. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I have for a long time and still do, right, have pride that I'm a fifth generation Californian in the sense that, that means something to me. And there's still a lot more work that I have to do and understand, like, there is no way to be a fifth generation Californian and a white person and not have really dark actions be a part of my legacy that have in some way determined where I am today, right? Because each generation is carrying forward in some way the luck or privilege or challenges or traumas and all of that from the previous. And it is interesting that I pride myself on being someone who really honestly looks at my own role in society and my own kind of legacy of family, and yet there's a lot of blockages there. It's really hard work to, because of this thing that you're saying, that it's like, but I'm a good person, you know, there's that little mm-hmm. voice like, but I didn't do it, mm-hmm. you know, that's not enough.
So a provocative question from the audience provokes an interesting discussion.
Yeah, this was a great panel, and Lauren Markham there wrapped it up. She wrote The Faraway Brothers about two El Salvadorian twins who came to the United States as juvenile immigrants.
Well, the UND Writers Conference also provides great fodder for Main Street. We appreciate that. Bill Thomas joining us. Decoded 8 Book is next.
Hi, I'm Jack Russell Weinstein, host of Why, philosophical discussions about everyday life. The question why is very empowering. It's about the divine, it's about the moral, it's about the pleasurable, it's about fear. Why is everything? I'm not very good with authority, and I'm not very good with limits. And so I like a question that gives me the ability to do whatever I want, whenever I want. I was born and raised in Manhattan, on the edge of a neighborhood that most people would know as Spanish Harlem. I ended up in North Dakota because they offered me a job. It's that simple. And we've had a very good life here so far. Dispel these myths. Philosophy is boring. I guess I would ask you to ask yourself, are you boring? Do you think you have nothing of interest to offer anybody? You are philosophy. Philosophy is you. Everything you ask, everything you think, everything you want, everything you strive for, this is what makes up philosophy. Philosophy itself is compelling enough and exciting enough that it is pretty much the oldest discipline. And philosophers had more influence on the world than almost anybody. Plato, Aristotle, we live in their world. And so if you want to make philosophy exciting, you have to be exciting. Philosophy majors can't get jobs or make any money. Philosophy is the highest paid major of all of the humanities, and the rate of return is actually the same over a lifetime as engineering. Listen to Why, philosophical discussions about everyday life, every second Sunday at 5 p.m. Central, 4 Mountain, on Prairie Public.
This is Decoded 8 Book for March 28th. In March of 1916, snowfall, combined with a spring thaw, caused rising water and ice along the Missouri and Little Muddy Rivers. In the midst of these conditions, a herd of deer became stranded on river ice outside of Williston. Having been frightened away from the railroad tracks when a Great Northern train passed by, the slippery ice left the deer unable to navigate back to solid ground. People feared the animals would not survive. Hearing of these reports, Chief Game Warden McCutcheon of Minot and his deputies went to help. A few deer escaped on their own, but McCutcheon and his men managed to rope and capture the majority. They plan to send four of the deer back to Minot, where they would be put on display at the Minot Zoo. But after several deer died from injuries related to the rescue, the number dropped to two. The Grand Forks Herald reported on the predicament of the deer, noting that the rising water had driven the deer from the lowlands, saying it brought to light the fact that North Dakota is a veritable game paradise and the home of numerous fine specimens of such animals. Although North Dakota's deer season had been closed until 1920, the Herald stated, "Present indications are that after that time, North Dakota sportsmen will enjoy some splendid shooting." Some of the rescued deer had been penned in Williston. Upon entrance to their new and temporary home, one deer proved its health by jumping a 7-foot fence, landing in a corral of horses. Quickly changing its mind, it jumped right back. Citizens of Williston watched the situation with great interest. The deer even provided impetus for a meeting to try to establish a state park through the Game and Fish Board. Meanwhile, the deer became a topic of hot debate. By this date, March 28th, Governor L.B. Hanna had received numerous complaints about the situation, claiming that the deer would not have perished if left alone, and asking that the deer be given their freedom. In the end, Minot did get some deer for Riverside Park. Much later, however, in September, from the Agricultural College in Fargo. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Sarah Walker. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
I am on a curiosity voyage, and I need my paddles to travel.
Prairie Republic has entered the brave new world
of podcasts.
Catch full episodes of Main Street Why, philosophical discussions about everyday life, and cool Prairie Public features like Tom Ezern's Plains Folk Essay, Matt Olean's Always Timely and Lively Movie Reviews, the flora and fauna infused Natural North Dakota, and if you love food, there's Chef Rosie. And of course, the Prairie Public favorite that gets passed around on social media a lot,
Dakota Datebook.
Just search for Prairie Public on Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today.
Then put your earbuds in and boldly listen to Prairie Public podcasts whenever you want.
I want my
podcasts!
Thursday on Main Street, we'll talk with UND journalism professor Mark Trahant about his decision to move to a new job as editor of Indian Country Today. And Chef Tim Rosendahl will tell us about a change in his life as he moves to the mountains of Georgia. And then we'll share Matt Olean's Friday new film review a day early because of the Good Friday holiday. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Thursday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.